You are listening to WGXC ACRA, hands-on creative community radio at 90.7 FM and streaming live online at WGXC.org. WGXC is a program division of Wave Farm.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today we have all sorts of songs and sounds and stories for you, including Julia Jorn travels to the southwestern part of Greene County, to Lexington, where Alex Rodriguez is the founder of Lexington Arts and Science. She'll tell you all about that today on the Morning Show, and we'll also hear from Howie Hawkins, Green Party's 2020 presidential nominee who lives in New York and was in Albany November 6th at the Global Day of Action for Climate Justice march in the state capitol. We'll hear from him about how it's going with climate change in the United States, and we'll also hear the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate and national headlines from the Public News Service. It's all on the WGXC Morning Show as soon as the local news finishes, and it's next. Stay tuned.
This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network.
Welcome to the Jazz Disturbance. A show featuring jazz and other improvisational music from local, regional, worldwide, and world-class artists, connecting listeners with the people and places presenting in the area. The Jazz Disturbance airs on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from our Hudson studio from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Jazz Disturbance, 90.7 degrees, hot.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. COVID-19 is roaring back locally, with Columbia County schools reporting COVID-19 cases have nearly tripled since October 1st. The number of active coronavirus cases in Ulster County jumped 118% since November 4th, and in Dutchess County, case counts are up 62% since November 1st. Now Sam Rawdens reports for Columbia Green Media that the Public Works Department in Hudson canceled the November 18th collection of recycling because of coronavirus. A staffing shortage because six of the 16 department employees tested positive for the coronavirus November 15th means no recycling pickup in Hudson until the day after Thanksgiving. Quote, recycling doesn't go bad, unquote, Superintendent of Public Works Rob Perry said. Quote, if they hold onto it for a week, it's not a public health issue, unquote. Perry has not said yet if garbage collection will be disrupted next week. Quote, I'm cautious about garbage pickup Monday and Tuesday, unquote, Perry said. While there are fewer employees available because of COVID, there has been more recycling in Hudson since the pandemic began. The city used to collect between 6 and 7 tons of recycling per week, but now it is up to 11 to 12 tons since March 2020. Perry guesses that is because of new residents and many more delivery packages. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
William J. Kimball reports in the Daily Freeman that Rhinebeck Village residents voted November 16th to block cannabis sales and bars. New York legalized cannabis in April, but municipalities have until December 31st to block sales and or bars where consumption is allowed. Rhinebeck residents voted 185 to 115 against sales and 235 to 63 against consumption sites. The Rhinebeck Town Board in September voted 4 to 1 against cannabis sales, so there won't be any cannabis stores in the Dutchess County town anytime soon. Towns can later allow sales, but they must block them by December 31st, or they are allowed. State regulators are still working out cannabis rules, and no store is expected to open in the state until at least next year. You can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Chloe Callahan reports in the Times Union that the town of Red Hook in Dutchess County is the latest local municipality to regulate short-term rentals that are partially to blame for skyrocketing local rents and housing prices. For years, local officials say the Hudson Valley needs more hotel rooms for visitors. That's led to more homeowners converting spaces to short-term rentals, which leads to fewer spaces for people to live full-time. Plus, some counties such as Greene have lost buildings in the past 10 years. And while the housing supply gets smaller, the demand has increased, with more people moving into the area looking for a place to live. Towns and villages could build affordable housing to help, but few are. So regulating short-term rentals has happened in Hudson, Village of Catskill, Woodstock, and other towns and villages. The proposed Red Hook law would require short-term rentals to register with the town for a permit to operate. While Woodstock capped the number of similar permits, Red Hook's proposal would not. But they are limiting permits to homeowners who use their home as their primary residence. And they are limiting the permits to 4 bedrooms in residential districts and 8 bedrooms in rural districts. Robert McKeon, Red Hook's town supervisor, explained that the town is less concerned with skyrocketing rents and more interested in stopping nuisance short-term rentals. Quote, we want to be mindful of the fact that if there is someone operating a short-term rental on the block, that we have the obligation to ensure for the other houses there is not a negative impact on them, unquote, said McKeon. Red Hook will hold a public hearing at 7:35 p.m. November 30th at the town hall on the short-term rental proposal. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Shana Liebman reports in the Times Union that Chef Hannah Wong has moved from New York City to Kinderhook and opened a building with 2 restaurants, a bar, and a general store. Wong has turned the Kinderhook Knitting Mill, a 19th century knitting factory, into a food spot. Morning Bird began serving lunch last week in the building and is a daytime coffee, tea, and lunch spot. Next year, a cocktail lounge called The Nest and a new Indo-Dutch restaurant, The Avery, are scheduled to open. In December, OK Pantry, a general store and soda fountain, and the Kinderhook Bottle Shop will open at 4 Hudson Street in the Columbia County town. Wong, who grew up in New Jersey, said, and I quote, "I had never thought about living upstate before. It just so happened that this was a good time in my life to make a move. I just packed my bags and moved up in the summer," end quote. She says more New York City chefs may be on the way. She said, and I quote, "Definitely a few chefs I know are starting to spend more time upstate, and that's pretty exciting," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
The Daily Freeman reports that the unemployment figures are low. Inflation is the leading economic complaint of politicians these days. On November 14th, New York Senator Chuck Schumer urged the Biden administration to employ the emergency petroleum reserves to lower gas prices. Quote, "We're here today because we need immediate relief at the gas pump, and the place to look is the Strategic Petroleum Reserve," unquote, Schumer said. On November 17th, Representative Antonio Delgado echoed Schumer's ask. Quote, "These price spikes are particularly harmful for working people and our small businesses who are less able to absorb higher energy costs," unquote, Delgado wrote in a letter to President Joe Biden. Quote, "I urge you to release inventory from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to help immediately stabilize gas prices and help those Americans in places like upstate New York who depend on heating oil, natural gas, and propane to heat their homes in the winter," unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Roger Gahanigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that singer Mariah Carey's estranged sister, Allison Carey, 60, is living in Greene County and struggling to survive. Her $794 a month in supplemental security income was recently reduced to $30, she says, because of an error. The Social Security Administration believed Carey was in a medical facility from April through July when her friend and advocate David Baker said she was only there a month. Carey said about Baker, and I quote, "I don't know how he's been doing it. He's been doing everything he can to help me. I really appreciate that," end quote. Carey says she has struggled with homelessness and has a brain injury from a home invasion robbery. Baker says they have appealed to the Social Security Administration and tried to get help from Senator Chuck Schumer's office. Carey is estranged from her very famous sister, apparently over childhood issues. In a 2020 autobiography, The Meaning of Mariah Carey, the singer alleged Allison, and I quote, drugged, end quote, a 12-year-old Mariah with Valium and offered her cocaine, and that the 20-year-old Allison gave Mariah third-degree burns and attempted to recruit her as a sex worker. Then Allison filed a summons in Manhattan Supreme Court this February, stating her intent to sue Mariah for $1.25 million for defaming her in the book. That summons said the, and I quote, "outrageous claims," end quote, in the book were made, and I quote, "knowing that Allison is profoundly and permanently damaged as a result of being forced by Carey's mother while a preteen to attend terrifying middle-of-the-night satanic worship meetings that included ritual sacrifices and sexual activity," end quote. So far, Allison Carey has not filed an official complaint, so no court date is pending. You can read more about this story in the Times Union.
And Bill Connors reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal about the new rules for deer and bear hunting as the season opens November 20th. First, the opening is different, now 1/2 hour before sunrise, which will be roughly 6:53 a.m. locally. There are also new safety rules requiring hunters to wear fluorescent orange or fluorescent pink. They include a minimum of 250 square inches of solid fluorescent orange or fluorescent pink material worn above the waist and visible from all directions, or a minimum of 250 square inches of patterned fluorescent orange or fluorescent pink consisting of no less than 50% fluorescent orange or fluorescent pink worn above the waist and visible from all directions, or a hat or cap with no less than 50% of the exterior consisting of solid fluorescent orange or fluorescent pink material and visible from all directions. Last hunting season, there were 22 firearm incidents, three of which were fatal, and one human death involving a tree stand. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, a chance of rain, mainly after 4 p.m. Otherwise, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 63 degrees. And Thursday night, rain before 1 a.m., then scattered showers between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. with a temperature low of around 35 degrees. And on Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 43 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 25 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at 90.7 FM on Thursday, November 18th. Including at 10 a.m., it's time for the Situation Fluxes show from Cheryl Kay. She talks with Federico Ugi, the drummer and co-owner of 577 Records. And then at 11 a.m., we head to Africa, and the Sailhouse Sounds label is the focus on the Transformational Listening Show on WGXC. At noon, we head back to Hudson, where Alan Skerritt is standing by after the local news with the two-hour Crossroads in Rhythm show with R&B, blues, rock, and more. At 2 p.m., it's time for What's the Frequency, Kenneth, the show that mixes the week's news with brand new music. At 3 p.m., Negative Land, Randy Rainbow, and Husker Du help out with the Sedition show on Turn On the News. Then we hear the Vienna Radia Collective at 3:30 p.m. on the Radia show. At 7 p.m., it's the Catskill Cabin Getaways turn with Kamlish Nadu, the guest. Then we hear an FM radio special at 8 p.m., and the Disco 3000 show is live from Toronto with Andrew O'Connor at 9 p.m. And Ted Barron is in with the Boogie Woogie Flu in Hudson live at 10 p.m. on the radio at 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The Museum of Firefighting in Hudson holds a Fire Truck Pinewood Derby race Saturday, November 20th from 10:30 a.m. until noon. That's at the Museum of Firefighting, 1117 Harry Howard Avenue in Hudson. You can call 518-822-1875, extension 17, for more information. And also go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for this and many other local events.
Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxes on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxes, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info at wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wavefarm radio app on your smartphone. Our website is wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, November 18th. A seasonably warm morning out there. 42 degrees in Ulster Park, 50 in East Jefferson. A high of 64 happens at 2 p.m. Shortly afterward, rain will enter the area and grow in intensity after dark. Half inch of rain is expected by 1 a.m. Then, the rain will stop before temperatures fall to 34 degrees. Tomorrow will be cloudy, dry, and have a high of only 45 degrees. A night with lows in the 20s will take us into a dry Saturday with a high of 45. 33 degrees Saturday night, and Sunday will have a high of 50 degrees with a touch of rain in the afternoon. Closest expected snowfall today is 300 miles away, just north of Bangor, Maine. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 1:59 a.m., low tide at 8:19 a.m., high tide again at 2:19 p.m., and low tide again at 9 o'clock p.m. Today's river temperature will be 46 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:19 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:46 a.m. Looking way up, we see a pretty quiet sun. Some sunspots, but no flare activity currently. Tonight will be the partial lunar eclipse, taking place during the moon's apogee, its farthest point from Earth, and its slowest. Solar wind speed is currently 527 kilometers per second at 5.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor for day and pretty much just as bad for nighttime. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 33. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Sarah of Montreal, Quebec. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
WGXC helps you sleep at night and stay awake in the daytime. Whether at work or play, in good times and in bad, no matter the weather, community radio brings you local news, agricultural information, music and sounds, oratory, and radio stews.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
Oh,
That was Spike Jones with Flight of the Bumblebee. And here is The Great Big Saul Came Nearer and Nearer.
Now he was a sawmill proprietor, and she a fair maid yet unkissed. One evening he winked his glass eye at her, but she said, "Nay, nay, sir, desist." So he dragged her into the sawmill, poor wench. Then he took off his belt and strapped her to the bench. And the great big saw came nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer. "Be my wife, or you will be cut in two," said the villain to poor little Vera. But she said, "Nay, nay, though you cut me in twain, the angels will stick me together again." And the great big saw came nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer. The villainous sawmill proprietor stood there with a sinister sneer. He should have done something to quiet her, for outside her sweetheart drew near. "Oh, someone please save me," was poor Vera's cry, and our hero rushed in with a gleam in his eye. And the great big saw came nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer. "Be my wife, or you will be cut in two," said the villain to poor little Vera. But she said, "Nay, nay, though you've money in banks, I wouldn't wed you if you cut me in planks." And the great big saw came nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer. Her sweetheart dashed up with a cry at her. "Oh, save me, my darling," she sighed. He knocked out that mean old proprietor and carried his sweetheart outside. "My hero," she said as they paused for a kiss, "we must wed and prevent situations like this." So their wedding day came nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer. Wedding bells ding dong, our hero so strong finally married his beautiful Vera. But soon, tired of marriage, she said, "Listen here, for goodness sakes, next time, please don't interfere." When the great big saw comes nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer. And nearer.
Welcome to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Julia Jorn, and I live and work in Round Top in beautiful Greene County. Come along with me as I meander through the Hudson Valley, the Northern Catskills, the Capital Region, and beyond to interview the people behind the special spots and hidden gems that make our area of New York State and our collective community both distinct and diverse. You'll likely discover that you don't have to travel too far to pay them a visit. They may already be in your own backyard or just around the corner. And I'll bet their place might turn out to be that one certain destination you keep meaning to check out. So I'm here to remind you, put it on your list. Together we'll meet shop owners and small business owners, curators, designers, and artists, chefs, farmers, and culinary experts, and other creative entrepreneurs. We'll hear their own personal stories, learn about their unique offerings, and hit them up for their own local recommendations. Thanks for listening.
Today I'm in Lexington in Greene County to meet with Alex Rodriguez, the founder of Lex Art Sci. We just took a walk on the property, which is about 30 acres, and it's nestled between the mountains and Schoharie Creek. So, Alex, what is this place?
Currently on the surface, It looks like a collection of old abandoned buildings. And some of them are right over the Schoharie Creek, which is known for its temperamental flooding. Route 42 runs right through the middle of it. And there's moderate traffic, some heavy truck traffic, and lots of tourists and locals. But what we, I guess, ended up being the sort of stewards of initially was an old art center. It was owned by theater companies. And on the one side of this collection of older looking buildings, some like very large buildings, including a barn and an old hotel and a big old farmhouse. On the one side, it's pristine forest. A lot of it's owned by New York City. A lot of it's preserved. And the reason it's preserved is because it's New York City watershed. So New York City gets about 40% of its water from this area. And it is one of the probably cleanest sources of water in the country. And so we are definitely blessed to have that. And on the other side is the town. And the town is, it's an aging population. A lot of people who are in the arts, a lot of people who just love the quietude of the place. And these are all things that we're taking into account when we're thinking about what to do with the property. We've been thinking about it for about 2 years now, and we've come to a lot of conclusions in that time, which we're really happy about, because it's sort of guiding our own progress, which we didn't really know, but it had a name. A friend of mine gave me a book called Strong Towns about a year ago. I said, hey, you have to read this, because it looks a lot like what you're doing, which is you're a Main Street revitalizer. And I said, okay, I didn't know I was a Main Street revitalizer, but let me add it. So I read the book, and it turns out that yes, so the Strong Towns movement is more about bottom-up grassroots development, using the resources in the local community, as diametrically opposed to a top-down, lots of money spent, Field of Dreams style building process, which is typical of the American style pattern development. And one of the reasons why this approach seems much more healing, perhaps, in a lot of ways, is because the latter version of development, which one you usually see when they just build a Walmart and like pave a whole space and then build an apartment complex next to it and let it fill up with people, those, when people move on, create liabilities for the town. They're not sensitive to the needs of the local community. They lead to things that people call gentrification. They lead to more inequality. They lead to more what you might call environmental racism, a lot of things that just don't seem fair and I believe aren't fair. But when you take this bottom-up approach, you're really simply hearkening back to the way our ancestors built and the way that they made small investments in places that incrementally led to larger investments. And that way of thinking about how to develop a town takes a lot more time, frankly, but it leads to more resilient communities. Strong Towns has a few interesting things to say about the infrastructure bill that came out, and it's not all praise, because a lot of the infrastructure bill is actually top-down and not actually addressing the root of the problem, which is actually painful to address. And I can personally like kind of attest to that sort of pain that you go through fixing a place like this. Because if you take a Strong Towns approach, things happen more slowly. But at the end, you know you're building more resiliency because the same people who are putting their time and energy into it are also benefiting, and the whatever value is created tends to stay in the local community, which is extremely important to us. I've never done any development projects before, but this is the first, and it's something I definitely want to be proud of and to show my daughter years later.
I see what you're saying, but these buildings on your property are so spectacular. They're so beautiful. They're large. There's a lot just to do, you know. Yeah. To work on a renovation project, as simple as that may sound, if you could have $1 billion and come and sweep in and do everything that you needed to do, it would kind of miss the point. And I like what you're saying, and I can't wait to actually read this book. I think it seems almost natural to work that way and think that way and build that way, especially here in the Catskills, as you get to know also the people who are here in the community and what people can offer and contribute and what kind of place they want to be a part of. And I saw walking around today that some of the rooms in the old hotel have actually already been inhabited by artists who have installed work.
Right.
Not your typical white cube art gallery, that's
sure.
for sure. It feels like every room in and of itself is part of a larger whole, but each artist has his or her or their own identity using that room to install whatever it is that speaks to them to be in this place. What was the reception to that kind of process with artists, and how did they find you, or how did you find them?
So we have worked closely with Prattsville Art Center, just down the road in the town of Prattsville, which is really impacted by the flooding of the same creek that we are on, the Schoharie. And through our natural connections and conversations with people, like this conversation that we're having right now, which I'm sure will connect more people to what we're doing also, is through these conversations you have, people say, that's fascinating. I want to be a part of it, or I'm inspired by the building, or we've had people who come look at the building and they say, you know, I did this 20 years or 30 years or 40 years or 50 years ago. Many people have deep emotional connections to this place, deep spiritual connections, deep like memories.
And those were people who had come to do mostly theater?
No, everything across the board.
Wow. It,
people who went to summer camp here, people learned to fish here.
It's had so many lives.
So many lives.
And touched so many
lives.
Lives.
And like the structures here, when they were originally built, as to service a dairy barn. This farmhouse that we're sitting in, the way the house is laid out suggests that many generations lived in the same house. The way the space is built is not a way that people are building spaces today. And it's a type of building and a way of living that largely has disappeared in our country, which I think is worth remembering and worth emulating to the extent that we can do so today.
There's something about what you're talking about, this strong town movement, that feels very similar to the slow food movement in a way. It's just like a different aperture for looking at things that you already know are kind of there. It's just being able to articulate them and have a framework for sort of flipping the story.
Right. And to some extent, to make it accessible to everybody. For example, sidewalks. Today when we met on the road, we're walking on the road. Why is everything built around the car? I know that the sidewalks were moved from this town, but there should be sidewalks. Access to water should be a universal human right. We have private creek access. Should it be private forever? Mm. Absolutely not. Why is that? That it's something that nature created and then we exclude others from. Like, taken to its logical extreme, then like we shouldn't even own this property, right?
Right.
Right. But
you, like you said, you're now stewards of this property.
We're
near
stewards, and,
yeah.
And like, this project is not about me. And there's more people every year. There's more people who have enough of an appreciation and want to be here that they are willing to kind of do what I'm doing and to be part of this community.
Getting back to this property. There's a lot to do.
Sure.
How do you sort of organize your thoughts as to what you are planning for this next year, the next couple of years? I mean, we walked through an incredible old theater in a barn today that had, I think, really encaptured the legacy of the theater companies that have been here before. It's very special being in that place. And then there's all these other spaces that you have, all these other buildings. How do you begin?
So the big thing right now has been preservation, mm-hmm. make sure the buildings don't get further damaged, and then finding the spaces that are most easily reactivated. And that word for us is kind of important because we're trying to reactivate as much as possible to get people in, like-minded people. Anybody, there's no bar to entry, who are interested in thinking through this with us and building up a community. We have tons of infrastructure. We have fast internet. We have sewer. We're connected to we have gray water treatment in town. We're only using like under 15% of capacity, so we know there can be a lot more people here. We need people. And the more that we create this welcoming environment and reactivate spaces, the more capacity we have to welcome these people actually and have a warm, safe place for people to be. So that's been our focus.
I like what you said about preservation and reactivation. Mm-hmm. What's so important about working slowly is the spaces will speak to you about what they need to do and what they need to be based on the community that you build around this reactivation.
That's exactly right. Right now, for example, I was just approached by Crestbell Growers, Annie Hall, and she's in her third year of growing cut flowers on the theory that we don't need to bring them from South America, which is something like 95% are brought from South America or Latin America. And she's growing them here in the Catskills, just around the corner. But she does not have worker housing. And without worker housing, she can't survive as a business. She can't persist. And so we are working with her to figure out what grants are available to be able to create housing.
I love that.
And we have space here. And so if we had gone and broken things and said, oh, we're going to do a hotel and like we're going to make fancy rooms and everything, then we wouldn't have the ability to support her in this, or anybody else. I hear local contractors are like, look, I need my foreman and his family need a place to live. Mike Barcone, Westco Brewery, tells me that he would not have been able to start his brewery today because of the cost of housing. These are people like Mike Barcone, his business is supporting a bunch of families, and it's a growing business that has so much potential, and it sort of puts Westco on the proverbial map. But it definitely, bringing it into the consciousness, shows how much creative power there is here, how much productivity there is possible. And again, like, we're in this unique position where we have the ability now as an organization to be a revitalization project for the entire community, not just simply fixing an old art center.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see what's going to be happening here.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alex.
Excellent. Welcome anytime.
Thanks for tuning in to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. If you're interested in checking out an ongoing list of local recommendations, or if you have recommendations of your own to share, go to my Instagram at Roundtop Recommends, or visit the Wave Farm website at wavefarm.org for the Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment archives and how to reach me. Talk to you next time.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
With a great deal of trepidation and sadness, I'm here because a video, and the headlines speaks to it, House to vote on censoring Republican Mr. Gosar, who shared violent video targeting a member of Congress.
Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee spoke about a now-deleted anime video posted by Arizona Republican Representative Paul Gosar to his social media accounts, depicting Gosar killing Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York. The House voted Wednesday to censure Gosar and strip him of his committee assignments. It is only the 24th time a member has been censured. The Senate Commerce Committee held a hearing Wednesday on a new term for FCC Chair Jessica Rosenworcel. The 9-year veteran commissioner talked about the need for adding funding to Biden's Build Back Better Act to address the nation's internet connectivity gap among students.
I just don't want to have to stop until we connect every child everywhere so no student is locked out of the virtual classroom.
Republican Arkansas Senator John Bozeman and others criticized the Biden administration on inflation and the cost of Thanksgiving-related goods and services, calling for a stop of, quote, reckless government spending.
This is going to be the most expensive Thanksgiving for American families in history. The turkey itself is going to be 18% higher than it was last year. Other costs, eggs, poultry, fish, meats, year over year, have increased 11.9%.
More than 100,000 people died last year from fatal drug overdoses, a first in U.S. history, according to the CDC. Experts blame the surge on the spread of more dangerous street drugs and disruptions to drug treatment programs caused by the pandemic. Texas Republican Representative Dr. Michael Burgess reacted to the news.
But certainly we cannot just stand by while 100,000 of our fellow citizens are stricken by this condition.
Former Trump political strategist Steve Bannon has pleaded not guilty to federal charges for defying a subpoena from the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Bannon was indicted last week on 2 counts of contempt of Congress. Finally, the state of Georgia has rested its case in the trial of 3 white men accused of killing Ahmaud Arbery, a black jogger. The medical examiner who performed the autopsy testified Arbery died after being shot 3 times at close range. 2 bullets hit him, including one that tore a hole in the center of his chest. The defense began presenting its case yesterday. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Did you hear that?
No.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC Akron, 90.7 FM. You're listening to 90.7 Akron, Catskills, today, East Durham.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
How's everybody doing? I hope you're fired up and ready to go, because with a climate issue, we in deep trouble. They just passed this bipartisan infrastructure bill that adds $25 billion in subsidies to the fossil fuel industry on top of the $20 billion they already give every year. And then they're saying, well, wait for Build Back Better. Build Back Better, what's left is corporate welfare. Most of the solar industry, for example, is dominated by big oil. Exxon Mobil, Chevron, BP, Shell, they're the ones investing in solar. And instead of mandating, which was the original proposal, a clean energy standard, to reduce carbon emissions from power production 4% a year, they cut that out. Instead, they're going to give them some money if they do that. But we've been through a decade where renewables have expanded, but fossil fuels have not decreased. And that's what we're going to get with this corporate welfare. Meanwhile, Biden's over in Glasgow saying a bunch of crap about deforestation and 30% reductions in methane, while he has on his desk the ability to stop the equivalent of 400 average coal plants. These are 23 natural gas projects. Pipelines, like we've been fighting in Line 3, in Line 5, and the Dakota Access Pipeline. He did his token gesture on Keystone and all these others, including 3 liquefied natural gas export facilities. He could stop the permitting in that, and he doesn't. So he's in Glasgow talking crap. Meanwhile, he's supporting the fossil fuel industry. That's where we're at. So we've got a fight on our hands. And they said this was the last chance in Glasgow. No, it's not, because it's not going to get done there. Now, I campaigned going back to 2010 for a Green New Deal to get to 100% clean energy and 0 emissions in a decade. And in 2010, that was 2020. And that's what the climate science said we ought to do. Now we're 2021. We're looking at 2031 to do this massive transition, which is going to require the transition from fossil fuel capitalism to an eco-socialism where transportation and energy, power production, and much of manufacturing is socially owned and publicly planned so we can get this transition done. By giving corporate welfare and relying on the market, it ain't gonna happen. Yeah. Hasn't happened when they've done these incentives in the past. Yeah. It's not gonna happen with what they're offering now. So that's what we gotta fight for. But things have changed since 2010. Back then, the industrial countries, the rich North, was releasing most of the carbon emissions. It's been a real transition. It really goes back over the last 20 years. The global South may be income poor, but in terms of production, because our corporations have moved factories overseas, the global South now produces 2/3 of the carbon emissions of the world. So now we need to be talking about a global Green New Deal. And the responsibility we have is climate reparations. Because historically, the U.S. accounts for 25% of all the emissions. And even with these emissions now coming from these other countries, a lot of that is embedded in the stuff we import. It's embedded in the rainforest we destroy for grazing cattle to get, you know, Big Macs, and for wood products, and for palm oil, which is part of so much of the processed food now. And those palm oil plantations don't absorb carbon like the rainforest does. So that's part of an unequal ecological exchange, which we bear major responsibility for. Now, people say, well, it's charitable to do these climate reparations, and yeah, we owe it. But I think we need to look at it more positively. These are investments in the habitability of the planet for all of us, including us in the North. So it's an act of solidarity with ourselves as well as people in the poor global South. So I did all that without my notes, and I think I'm about halfway through. So on reparations, in Cancun in 2009, that COP, they said, yeah, even though the U.S. resisted, we should help the poor countries make this transition and help them deal with the damages already caused. Took them 2 years later to commit to $100 billion a year by the year 2020. Well, as of right now, and this is 2021, the world has only contributed, the rich countries, $10 billion out of the $100 billion a year promise, $10 billion total. It ain't even real. Plus, $100 billion even enough. If you just talked about what the U.S. ought to contribute to this reparations fund, it's called the Green Investment Fund, did it on a per capita basis, population, the U.S. owes $35 billion a year. If you did it on the basis of GDP, U.S. owes $45 billion a year. If you use it on the basis of historical carbon emissions, U.S. should be given $51 billion a year. Right now, in Build Back Better and this bipartisan bill that just passed, there's zero. Now, there's been an analysis, it's called Fair Shares Nationally Determined Contribution, NDC, that's what all the countries are supposed to do. They did it in Paris, they're supposed to up it in Glasgow. And a group of environmental groups, a coalition, Center for Biological Diversity, Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth, did an analysis when Biden said last spring, we're gonna cut emissions by 50%. And like I said, he don't have a plan for that. But they said, no, you got to cut by 195%. And how do you cut by 195%? Yeah. Well, you help other countries cut their emissions. Yeah. Yeah. U.S. emissions, by their analysis, should be cut 70% by 2030 if we're going to be on a path to 1.5 degrees Celsius rise. That's the goal. But then with these climate emissions, the climate reparations, then you can help other countries. That's how you get to 195%. That's our responsibility. So what's $100 billion a year? It's 10% of the military budget. We can afford that. If we did that, it'd be the world's humanitarian superpower instead of its global military empire. We'd do more for peace and security than all that military spending. We would make friends instead of enemies. But this climate reparations isn't even what's before the federal government. So let me conclude by saying this. Our responsibility in this country is to get a domestic Green New Deal and to get some money for these climate reparations. That's the most important thing we can do. But then we gotta be in solidarity, because where these emissions are coming from, India, China, Indonesia, Brazil, South Africa, they have movements for their own Green New Deals. We need to be in solidarity with them. Because this is now a global problem, not just something that we can solve alone here in the United States.
Amen. Thank you, Howie. That was brilliant.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Here's transmission art from Vladimir Ushevsky with Wireless Fantasy. Thank you.